Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST. We are Baltimore Positive. We are at Lexington Market. We fed the congressman a crab cake here, so we're going to get full attention in this segment here. This is going to be the best part of the show.
Give a quick shout-out to our other sponsors, Jennings and State Fair in Catonsville, here at Fadley's. Visit all of our sponsors. As we said, we've got a well-fed congressman, loves the crab cake. Says his brother.
There's always napkins nearby too.
He's actually going to send the picture of him eating.
Yes, I took a picture of me eating a crab cake to make everybody I know jealous.
Going to taunt his brother.
So I'm definitely happy.
Well, it's good to have you. Go ahead.
We can't have you on without talking about what I think's been described, and Nestor's going to call it up, as one of the most gerrymandered. District.
Well, I put a picture of us up while we were doing the last segment, and my buddy Ed Stilk says, ask him about his district. So
I get those questions.
Yeah, I bet you do.
You do a little traveling as a congressman. Talk to us about your district, and then the whole issue of gerrymandering, because anybody would look at that district
and say, that's not normal.
That's kind of silly.
So the way the district lines are drawn in Maryland does end up with these crazy-looking districts, and you have a combination of the fact that Maryland is a weird shape to begin with, then you run the Chesapeake Bay through it, and then you sprinkle it with some politics, and you end up with some pretty weird looking
get a weird
districts.
Stew there.
Yeah,
there's a word for that. Gerrymandering's the word.
Yeah, and mine is one of them. So it's actually interesting that the bill that I've introduced, we're going to talk about, H.R. 1, includes a national solution to partisan gerrymandering. In fact, when we passed H.R. 1 on March 8th of this year in the House of Representatives, this broad reform bill, it included this provision that says every state in America should have to set up an independent nonpartisan redistricting commission to draw a line.
How is that possible?
That's called good government.
Just as a citizen,
yeah.
Tell me how that sounds. That sounds like fantasy world to think that we could do that in this environment.
Well, we got all the Democrats in the House of Representatives to vote for that.
But who would be the nonpartisan? I'm guessing who would be that arm? That's where I am.
There's states that have done this, and they've done it very well. You look at California, you look at Iowa, there's places around the country that have set up these commissions. There's still a backstop where you can go to court if you think there's a problem. But the point is the initial drawing of the lines is done in a nonpartisan way. There's all kinds of criteria and requirements to get who can serve and all the rest of it,
sure.
Who gets to choose those people. And you end up with a group that has as their first responsibility and focus just drawing lines that make sense in terms of the public's appetite for what they want to see.
You wouldn't come out with Maryland's third congressional, I don't think.
You wouldn't have that because there'd be other imperatives at work that would govern all the districts in Maryland, and under the bill that we proposed, would govern all the districts in America. Because the problem here is, Don, you got to fix it across the country at the same time. You can't have just some states doing it and other states not doing it, because then in the places where you don't have these commissions, it gets even more political. So a nationwide solution is what makes sense. And when we passed that in the House, just so people understand, it was the first time in American history that either chamber of Congress had voted for a solution to partisan gerrymandering.
Now, I want to emphasize that, and then I want you to talk at length about H.R. 1, because as long as I've known you, this whole issue of elections and campaign finance has just been something that you've been extremely passionate about.
Right.
But again, we talk about this echo chamber or this misinformation that's out there. You'll hear all the time that both parties gerrymander, and Democrats are just as bad. Democrats don't want a solution. I want to reiterate, you said every Democratic congressman voted for H.R. 1.
And we had no Republicans co-sponsor the bill or vote for the bill. And we had no Republicans support a solution to partisan gerrymandering at the national level. So here's the thing, and this is important. Democrats can't pretend that we're pure and the other side is not when it comes to all these things, political things, money and politics and so forth. I think we've been a little bit better than the other side, but it's not like we're saints. The issue is who wants to actually fix the system so that the public feels like they are respected. And if you look at that we're really different from the other side because we are putting these proposals forward and we're voting for them. So let's take the three baskets that we pulled together into H.R. 1, the For the People Act, which we introduced on day one. First thing the Democrats did when they got the gavel back after 8 years in the wilderness was introduce the For the People Act, and I was proud to be the author of that bill.
And it passed on March the 8th.
Passed on March 8th. And every Democrat, by the way, in the Senate co-sponsored the companion bill. So every Democrat on Capitol Hill has supported this broad reform, not one Republican. And, of course, Mitch McConnell is like, it's dead on a rock.
Sitting on his desk somewhere.
He doesn't want to do that because that would completely tear down the power structure that he's built for himself and his buddies over the last few years.
Talk about the three buckets. Tell us what's
in. So here are the three things we hear from people.
The four dummies version of H.R. 1.
Three things we hear from people out there. The first thing they say to us is, I want to get to the ballot box in America without running an obstacle course. You know, it's ridiculous. Make it so I can register pretty easily and then be able to vote. And you look at other
not
countries.
Not take the day off from work.
What does that mean?
Sure.
Early voting. We got to have more early voting days across the country. That's in H.R. 1. Same day registration. That's in H.R. 1. Promote absentee ballots and vote by mail. That's in H.R. 1. Build more infrastructure so that you got more people at the polling places administering the election so you end up with these huge lines or broken machines. Paper ballots. Make sure every state, we've done it here, but every state in the country should have a paper ballot so that there's a trail so we can protect ourselves against attacks coming in on our election systems. So automatic voter registration would add, and that's in H.R. 1, 50 million people to the rolls in this country, which is an incredible number when you think about it.
That might affect the Electoral College.
Does that mean when you turn 18, you're automatically registered to vote?
What it means is when you interact with agencies that are collecting, so like you're getting a driver's license, where you're going to some
real ID,
Department
right?
of Human Resources, things like that. When you're doing that, they're collecting all the information that you need to get your voting card. So the idea is they will automatically register you at that point unless you want to opt out of it. That would make it a lot easier for people to get registered in America. And the statistics show that once people are registered, they're more likely to vote on election day. So my thing is, look, if America, and we believe this, is the greatest democracy in the world, why is it still such a challenge to vote on election day? And the other thing we've seen over the last few years, which is really insidious, is more voter suppression going on around the country.
Horrific.
And that's taking us backwards. So we also have provisions in H.R. 1 that say if you're going to do that kind of stuff, that's a crime.
Well, everything that happened in the state
punished.
Of Georgia was
well, you had the Secretary of State who was in charge of all the elections. He's running for governor at the same time as he's handling the vote. Right. I mean, come on now.
Right.
I mean, even if
we wouldn't allow that in high school SGA elections, right?
Exactly. I mean, even if you're pure than the
I tried that
snow,
in Dundalk. I didn't get away with it.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, so that's the voting part and also fixing the gerrymandering. That's where people say to us, look, I just want to vote. Just make it easy for me to register and vote. Right. I don't want to have to, you know, have my vote suppressed or anything like that. And also, when we tally up the vote, we got to have confidence in the result. That's where you put all these protections in against cyber hacking and messing around with the vote tally, which we saw the Russians were trying to do, right? So that's the first thing. Improve voting in America. We got great reforms there. The second thing they said to us is, when you go to Washington, behave yourself. You're right? You know, act ethically. Have conflict of interest rules that you pay attention to. Be transparent. So we put a whole set of things in there about conflicts of interest, making sure there's a code of ethics that applies not just to the executive branch, where God knows we need it, but also to the legislative branch, to the judiciary, to the Supreme Court. Ethics to govern the behavior, because people want to feel like once they elect you and you get there, that you're behaving properly. That you're respecting them, that you're not cutting corners, you're not looking out for yourself, all that kind of stuff. So lobbying reform, because lobbyists have too much power in Washington. So that's the second basket. And the last thing they've been saying to us for years is, when you get to Washington, don't get tangled up in the money. Because once you start hanging out with the lobbyists and the K Street crowd and the insiders and the special interests, you forget about the people. and you start doing the bidding of a very small group of power brokers, and then all the policy priorities get made for them instead of for the broad public. So that's a tough one, because these industries have figured out how to pour money into Washington, into campaigns, and all the rest of it, so they can influence the legislation. So there's two things we do there. One is more transparency. Where's that money coming from? Because there's all this secret dark money, super PACs, everything else. We need to know where it comes from so we can have some accountability. But here's the power move. The power move is, let's create a new system for funding campaigns in America where we match small donations. And that way, a member of Congress can go out, collect small donations, get matching funds, and power their campaign that way, so they don't have to go hat in hand to the power brokers on K Street. They can say to the people, you power my campaign, and I will turn right around and work for you. And that's the power move that we're seeing. A lot of people in the public are like, you know what? We should be in charge of this thing. We should own this thing. Because if you leave government unattended, the special interests will come in and they'll try to own it. So let's take back control with a small donor matching system. And by the way, Montgomery County did it in their last election. Howard County has a system. And Baltimore, to its credit, is looking at putting a system like this in place. It would match small donations. And the other thing that happens, two other things. One is, as a candidate, I go looking for the $25 donor.
Right.
Instead of going up to collect the $1,000 check on K Street. Because if I get a bunch of small donations and I get a 6-to-1 match, which is what we propose in our bill, that's real money. I can run a campaign on that. Secondly, you get people running for office who right now can't do it because they don't know a lot of people with a lot of money. But if they can step up, hustle, get those small donations, get matching funds, they can run a pretty good campaign. And you look in Maine, you look in Seattle, you look in New York City, you look in Arizona, Connecticut, where they have systems like this. And the makeup of their legislature is very diverse.
Changes.
You know, more women, more socioeconomic diversity, because people can run for office who right now, they can't afford to do it. They don't have deep pockets. So it is a power move. It's Americans coming onto the floor, onto the field, rather, of their own democracy and saying, we are going to be a power
player. Our forefathers never saw rich people, did they? Not to this wealth, right? Not to this kind of wealth to...
The ability of wealthy interests to capture the policy-making
machinery.
Especially
corporate wealth. Yes. Corporate wealth didn't exist
Absolutely.
Like that in 1776.
No, but they've found a way to capture the policy machine. And it's by writing checks.
To convince people it's not 94 degrees today on October 2nd.
Exactly right. And that's a very good point. Connect the dots. The money crowd stands in the way of doing the right thing on climate change. The money crowd is standing in the way of doing the right thing on gun safety.
On energy.
On tax policy. On energy. All the rest of it. They write the checks. They write the laws. We have to flip the script on them. And the power move is to say, you know what? We own the joint. We'll underwrite the campaigns with these small donor contributions and matching funds. And here's the other thing we did, which is great. We said, you know what? We're not even going to use taxpayer money to pay for this system. The matching funds that come in, you know where they come from? We're going to put a small surcharge, 2.75% surcharge, on these big corporations when they settle with the government for fraud or screwing consumers, that kind of stuff. And we'll take that money, put it into a special fund, and that will match the small donation. So what we're saying is we're going to go to the people who broke the democracy, and we're going to make them
pay.
They're going to pay to fix it.
It's like Mexico paying for the wall.
They're going to pay to fix it. And so that is the way we set this this system up. So Wells Fargo settles for $500 million with the federal government because they're committing fraud on their consumers. We'll take a little piece of that, put it in this fund, and that'll come in and match the small donor who's making a $25 contribution.
Well, describe then, and I know we're coming up against the clock. You've got to go. You've been gracious with your time. Describe the climate then on the Hill for our listeners. You've just taken 10 minutes to outline pretty straightforward reforms that would make our democracy work better. You've been unable to get any support at all from the other side. When you have a private conversation with your colleagues on the other side of the aisle, what do they say to you? What do they verbalize?
Well, it benefits them. It's like the rules in New
England. That's not what they're saying.
But that's the truth.
I think it's a combination of things. I think that the kind of changes we want to make are pretty drastic. They would upset the status quo. They would change the culture in Washington. It's even scary for Democrats who've gotten used to that system. But we're willing to take the chance because we see how angry and frustrated and powerless it makes so many Americans feel. And when they feel that way, what do? They grab for drastic solutions.
A guy like this gets elected.
Exactly. Well, and 16 and 18, Don, are two case studies in two radically different ways you can go when you want to solve your anger as Americans, when you feel bad about corruption and angry about it. The 16 solution is we'll go get this guy who's got a baseball bat and a slogan, and we'll give him the power. He's going to drain the swamp and all that kind of. He didn't do any of that. The 18 solution was amazing. They found a team of reformers, these new candidates from across America, many of them women candidates, who came in saying, you know what, give us the gavel, we've got a plan, and in the first 100 days, we will pass legislation to fix this broken system. And they got elected with that message. We introduced it on day one, and within the first 100 days, they passed it. So I say to folks, you want to solve your anger and your sense of being powerless in America? You got the 16 option, which didn't work out too well, and you got the 18 option. Go with a team, go with reformers who have a plan and are going to follow through. And if we keep pushing that message out there, I think that's where people will take their desire for change instead of going in the other direction. Well, and Republicans, I think, are just more scared of what that new world looks like than Democrats are right now. We're ready to take that chance because we know the people want to see that happen.
Well, it's an interesting discussion. We're going to have you back. We haven't talked about health care, guns, so many issues that you're very much involved in. Real quick, though, before you run.
Yeah.
In July, you went down to Texas to look at the detention centers. You wrote a letter. Just share with our listeners what it felt like seeing that up close, because we have to live it through you. We didn't get to go down there.
People there look like me, and that really disturbs me. Around my people from Venezuela, you know, I don't like that.
Well, and actually, I saw a young man in one of these holding pens who looked exactly like the pictures I've seen of my grandfather who came over to this country at the age of 16 from Greece. Dark complexion, came with a dream and lived the dream. His son, my father, my grandfather's son, first generation in this country, first opportunity to get a decent education, became a United States senator. It's American dream. So I was looking at people thinking, that's my life right there. That's my story right there. You know, I come from immigrant background. And to see people in those conditions and to feel like this is not who we are as a country. That was tough. It was rough stuff to see that. But it's what happens
that when our flag's doing that to these people.
Exactly.
That's disgraceful.
It's what happens when you get a combination of three things. One is you have an immigration system that's been broken for a long time, that we got to put more resources behind and all the rest of it. Two, you do have this surge of people coming to this country, fleeing very difficult circumstances, so it's putting more pressure. But three, and this is the most consequential thing, you have an administration that is hard-edged, mean-spirited, leans towards punishment instead of solutions to these problems.
I mean, this morning we had the president reported talking about putting alligators and snakes in a moat and electrifying a fence and shooting people in the leg. I mean, that's not who we are.
That's
not fake news.
That's not who we are. And I think that this is why I have confidence that at the end of the day, people are going to take their grievances, and it includes grievances about how we've been treating people at the border. And they're going to take those grievances to the ballot box, put them in the ballot box, and say, it's time to move on. We got to build a better America. So my slogan has been, beat Trump, fix democracy, rebuild America.
And with
one,
that,
two, three.
There
that's
you
it.
Go. Thank
like
you, Congressman
any crab
John.
Cakes.
Congressman,
any crab
cakes, crab cakes.
Sure.
Congressman
yes.
John Sarbanes. Thank you so much. We've got to have you back.
Don. And by
so
the way, Don, thank you for your public service, which is outstanding.
Welcome.
This is just an extension of it. But the decades you put into public service made a huge difference for Baltimore
Thank
County.
Thank you.
I'm a resident of Baltimore County now, so I can appreciate the benefits of your leadership.
Thank you.
He fixed a 13-year-old kid from Dundalk back in the day, too. You know?
That's not so easy,
so
right?
We're still arguing about the Orioles, but that's neither here nor there. John Sarbanes, our great congressman, joining us here. We're Fadley's Lexington Market. Come on down. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore sports.